Good evening, everyone. I declare the meeting. It's available on the City of Meyrin website. I ask elected members present if there is any anticipated conflict of interest or such. There being none, I continue to see if somebody would like to move confirmation of the minutes for the 13th December General Council meeting. Moved, Councillor Telfer, seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We do have a last-minute deputation. Peter Thompson would like to come and speak to us about Louise Avenue Reserve. That is an item on the agenda this evening. So thank you, Peter, for coming forward. Abby here will instruct you on how to use the microphone. You have 5 minutes. If you finish early, there'll be time for questions, if there are any, from the elected members. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Just bear with me a moment, if you wouldn't mind, please. Forgive me if I sort of ramble on a bit tonight. I haven't had much time to prepare for tonight. I've waddled through a measure that says that the parks have to be within 400 or 500 metres of someone's residence. And I'm not sure,
I can just help you with that one, Peter.
Sure.
Council has decided it would be a fair guide in terms of distribution of reserves to take that as a measure of appropriate distribution.
Yes.
Please go on, though.
That measurement of 400 to 500 metres. But I'm saying, where did that figure come from? Was that just plucked, or is that a written compliancy?
It's not mandatory, but it's a commonly used benchmark for provision of reserves in metropolitan Adelaide.
It is. So it's not, is it written in a compliance documentation somewhere, or is it just something that's plucked out of the sky?
It's certainly not plucked out of the sky, but it's not mandatory.
Well, try to put it that way. I didn't mean to sound rude that way, but I mean...
No, it's a council preference, but it's not mandatory.
Okay. Moving along, page 101, under discussions. Again, it mentions in there the 400 to 500 metres distance again. But I've just added some. Just bear with me for a moment, please. No, I think that's answered. That's okay. Page 102. It states there, second paragraph down, it should be noted that the community land classification must be revoked pursuant to section 194 of the Local Government Act 1999 before any of the following properties can be sold. This includes consultation with the community. I'm a bit bemused at that actual that sentence there. What does that actually mean? I mean, to the layman, it says, you know, unless the community land classification is revoked. In other words,
Mr. Jamieson, can I help you just to plead your case?
Thompson.
Sorry, Mr. Thompson, I've only just got it at the last minute.
That's
I beg your pardon for the error. The revocation is a technical thing that has to happen if any community land is going to be disposed of. But I would urge you to concentrate on the value of that open space to your local community.
Sure.
In the limited time that you have left.
Sure, I understand. All right, I'll move along then. I might save that one for a good time. Sorry, again. Pages 154 through to 160, which gives comments from the residents who actually put in their comment via the get the name of the form. Anyway, they're headed, how often would you access the site? What is your main purpose for using the reserve? Do other members of the family use it? And what do you value the Louise Avenue? The first column there, there's a lot of people that have actually put in never there. I question the relevance of actually that being actually part of this document. And what I mean by that is some of the never responses are saying they've never used the park, never have used the park, or they're old, or they just don't use the park full stop. I mean, I don't know. What we're trying to understand here is actually the further use of that park. If these people are saying they never use it, why would that be added into that document? I don't think it can be questioned that's relevant that they should be added into this documentation. If they say they never use it, they should be part of this discussion. Page 107, on the conclusion there, I've just got a note there, if the council or someone could explain to me what the council's strategic objectives are in regards to this park or the parks, that's why I'm a bit bemused about this. What are the council's strategic objectives?
Mr.
Thompson.
Thompson, your time is up, and it's been unfortunate that it was necessary to have a bit of dialogue during the course of that. But because we're intensely pressured by council business from now to mid-December, we won't be able to go on. Mm-hmm. But we do note your concern. Completely understand that. There are some genuine questions you have. I appreciate that. And I think I would... Can I have a staff member put up their hand to have a discussion with Mr. Thompson about some of these issues? Because part of it is just helping to...
Don't all rush.
Thank you. We've got someone up the back there who'll have a chat to you later on. But part of it's about just understanding the process and the procedure. The main thing is that as part of our democratic process, we've given you an opportunity to express the value of this land to the people in your community. But for those questions that you've raised, I'd invite you to talk to our staff member up back there, and that'll help you understand what's happening. You're welcome, of course, to stay for the rest of the meeting. You can leave any time you wish. I think we'll, because we have a lot to get through, we'll just...
I'll just finish very, very briefly. Thanks very much for your... thanks very much for your comments. I understand some of the comments you've made as well, and I haven't been exactly clarifying with some of the things I've said tonight, but again, that was just because I was rushed trying to get here tonight and also waddle through the actual quite lengthy document. So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Well, we do have the option. In fact, we get to the business item regarding council property fairly soon anyway, so I'd suggest to council we just stick with the agenda as written, and pretty soon we'll get to that item which Mr. Thompson's interested in anyway. So he's going to have a quick chat with one of our staff, but someone can remind me to actually call him from the foyer when we actually deal with that item. Thank you, everyone, for that. There's a petition regarding Nanagai Reserve. Could I have someone on page 50 of the agenda? You'll see that. Can I have someone... do we have a... Do we not... you'll see on page 52 some recommendations. Now, they're not the... The recommendations, I just note if somebody wants to move them, do actually have a substantive point, not just noting the petition, but it's up to you, members, what you would like to do. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I've have some alternative wording for this resolution.
And is that up on the screen? You happy with that, Councillor Crossland? Is that your wording?
Yes, I'm happy with that, thank you.
All right. Well, I'll just check, is there a seconder for Councillor Crossland's alternative? Councillor Byram is seconding. Over to you, Councillor Crossland, to put your point.
Yeah, I'm supporting the weight on all aspects of this investigation. A lot of it does depend on the tennis review, which... ultimately will affect the toilet block and potentially the play space. I'd like all three to be considered at the same time. I don't support the idea of considering the whole reserve and then going in during that consideration and removing the toilet. I think that wouldn't fit with our reconsideration of the whole project. So, and I think the timeline of the 28th of February is not that far away, so we can just defer the decision until then.
Councillor Byram, anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the whole picture and not take things piecemeal. There's also an old shed there that is under consideration, and apparently that's not part of the open space. So there's a lot of things there that need to be considered and brought in all together.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against that motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We move on to corporate reports. The final draft open space policy is there for you. Report begins on page 88. Councillor, sorry? I beg your pardon. I've missed a committee recommendation. I haven't got glasses tonight, so I'm literally flying blind. Councillor Telfer, you're moving to confirm the minutes of the Finance and Audit Committee. Are you?
Yes.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson. Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak to that? Very well. Councillor Hutchinson, that's cool. Unless there are any questions, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And now, indeed, I can go to page 88, the open space policy, which has come back from public consultation. So this is it. I'm not raising any objections to it at this stage. It's been discussed a lot. Councillor Blescu?
Move as is, Your Worship.
Yes, and that's seconded, Councillor Crossland. Did you wish to speak to it, Councillor Blescu? Councillor Crossland, anything?
No, thank you.
Is anyone speaking against the motion? No, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And now we go to the report. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the one that refers back to Louise Avenue Reserve. So could one of the staff ask Mr. Thompson to, or invite Mr. Thompson to come back in if he's... He has departed. That's fine. We can proceed with that matter. It's on page 99 of the agenda. Essentially, we're asking for, or the staff recommendation is to ask for further investigation in relation to certain reserves, which carries with it a budget implication, and following that, a report would be brought back 11th of April 2017. That's the plan. So, Councillor Telfer, moving as printed. That's second, Councillor Byram. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Telfer?
A short comment that this is part of our plan to focus on the reserves that we want to put resources into, and in doing that we need to see that the reserves that have lesser value maybe are looked at in this whole scenario. So I'm keen that this happens.
Councillor Byram, anything to add?
Yes, thank you, Worship. I think it's important that the residents understand that it's very hard to maintain every open space, every reserve to the highest standard, and that we need to rationalise what we are doing with the council rates that we get from them, and that we need to look actively at what is the best way to get the best reserves, and that means some have to go. And I think that's very important that the residents do note that.
Is anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Blescu?
Question.
Question.
At what point is this reserve essentially lost, like it's gotten rid of? at what point in this process?
Well, Councillor, when the report comes back in April, if the investigations show no impediment to taking the next step, there's still a statutory report that's required. I'll ask Ms Dixon to comment.
Through the Chair, so a report will be brought back to Council in April, and then if Council endorses to pursue disposal of those reserves, then it needs to go to the Minister for approval as well. And so, do you want to come?
I'll just repeat that some helpful comments from Ms Hampton in the gallery. Essentially, if Council was minded to take the next step, there would need to be preparation for revocation of community land. That in itself entails community consultation. So there are a couple of steps yet to go before disposal would actually be possible as a reality. I hope that answers the question. Anything more, Councillor Blesko?
To speak. Look, this will provide us an opportunity to, I guess, get further council consultation. Maybe there's a little bit more qualitative data that we can get, and council will be in a better position to look at the opportunity cost of keeping or getting rid of this parcel of land. But I think by keeping it on there until the next step provides us an opportunity to see how it compared to the other consultations we do. So that could give us an idea whether this is indeed different to what we get from those others. So I think it is important that we do listen to what our residents want, especially to see how important some of these empty parcels of land are for them. But let's do that in the context of a few of the others we are looking at as well.
Is anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Councillor Hull.
Mr Mayor, I will, because this is about sticking to an identified need that we identified some time ago. Nobody likes selling off open space if it's unnecessary. And I think it's important to note, Mr Mayor, that many of these blocks, particularly Louise Avenue, who I live one block away from, is one building block. They are one building block of questionable value to the community. Would I take my kids round there to the closest park to my house? No, I wouldn't. The playground equipment's gone anyway because it wasn't being used. The solar-powered light didn't work for some time. There are a number of pocket handkerchief reserves around the city that are of little value to the community. Mr Mayor, the important thing with this is, regardless of whether the media see the wisdom in picking up this point, is that we're actually investing this money back in the Open Space Fund. Remember what we did earlier in this term, Councillor Pfeiffer? The money that we actually saved over an extended period of time, which I'm quite proud to be a part of, since 1993, was used in a big way to buy a big chunk of land in the north of the city known as Jervois Reserve. That's what we've got the capacity of doing. This is what this is about. It's not about being opportunists and identifying product in the city. It's about actually rationalising and having sensible use of our open space. Now, my view is, in my part of the world, is that the money from this land could be re-injected into Ballara Reserve, which we're looking at reducing tennis courts and creating more open space there of a practical nature, instead of several family members having exclusive rights to that tennis court that we're paying for, as an example. So I think it's important for us to actually understand what we're doing here, to sell the point to the community why this is so. For people that actually see these reserves as an extension of their own yard, I'm sorry, but I can't help you.
Is anyone else speaking against the motion? Then I'll ask for the mover to close the debate. Councillor Telfer.
I commend this motion in that we're asking residents to divest of small blocks of land so that we can invest in open space that better helps them near them.
I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried by majority. Now we turn to page 164. Yeah. The play space framework. Now, it sort of doesn't... if anyone wants to move an amendment replacing the word play space with playground, I'd be only too delighted to entertain that so that the community actually knows what we're talking about. But it's one of those in-house words that we can carry on with if you wish. Hang on, we'll build it into the motion, Councillor Gard. I'll probably turn to you. Yeah, that's... I didn't quite catch that. Now, I'm not looking for interjections, but the other thing I need to report about the draft policy, and bearing in mind it's just to go out for consultation, but the other thing is that there's been quite a bit of a discussion between myself and I think some other elected members and staff about the extent to which we design unique playgrounds for each space. And you'll see that the report has been somewhat modified to take into account elected member concerns, which I translate to be community concerns. And you'll see that staff have identified that they could probably save around 5% in capital costs just by streamlining that process and having a standardised palette of designs. But it is still proposed that there be a unique design for each area. When you look at the draft place-based policy, you see words like unique, varying and diverse. I think it would be an excellent policy without those words. We would still be committing ourselves to playgrounds of excellence throughout the city in the hierarchy of local, neighbourhood and regional. But this is the debate that seems to be ongoing with the... And I mean ongoing between elected member concerns to have cost-efficient provision of services versus... staff preference to have uniqueness of each playground. So if you want to take all of those concerns, do what you will with them. I'll look to Councillor Gard to move a motion as he sees fit.
Well, I do move, Your Worship, that the word play space be substituted by way of an amendment, because and I do have reasoning when it comes to my talking to the motion.
Well, the way we'll do it, Councillor Gard, is you're essentially moving the motions 1, 2 and 3 that are printed, but perhaps uses, well, perhaps there's a motion at the beginning becoming a new paragraph 1 that council prefers the term playground to play space.
Yes. I'd support that.
I'm just getting advice from the Acting Manager of Governance. Ms. Thwaites, you're suggesting that we have an amendment at the end of paragraph one. Okay. Councillor Gard, did you anticipate any other changes?
No, Your Worship.
Mm-hmm. Very well. Then perhaps if we have at the end of Appendix 1 and, well, at the end of Motion 1, if it, there's a comma that says, except that the term play space, except that the term playground shall be used instead of the word play space. So that's the motion, but while we're just administratively getting that, I'll ask Councillor Crossland to ask a question.
Thank you, Your Worship. It is relevant to that change. I just question the term play space, I believe, was going to be used for reserves with not just playgrounds but like nature play and other things for community activity, and I just wondered if we could give staff an opportunity just to clarify that we are just talking about playgrounds and not therefore reserves with other forms of play areas in them.
So Councillor Crossland, just to be clear, you're suggesting that the word playground connotes only playing areas where there is built equipment?
Correct, that's my concern, and are we therefore eliminating all the other reserves with different
of
forms of play?
All right, I'll ask Ms Dixon to respond. Thank you.
Through the Chair, that is correct. The term play space is used to encompass reserves. So if you look at a neighbourhood level play space, that is often accompanied with sporting facilities, courts, basketball rings, such things. At a regional level, it can be much broader with activities. It covers things like Heron, the foreshore, Hallett Cove Reserve development is covered in that space. The Oaklands wetland is covered in that space. So the term play space is much broader than a playground.
Very well, that answers the question. So, Councillor Gard, where does that leave you? Are you? What are you doing?
Your Worship, do we need a seconder before I can speak?
Well, before you go on, I've got a question from Councillor Valescu. As long as it's just a question.
I was just wondering whether a playground and play space policy can encompass all forms of play while identifying to the community what it's primarily about.
Ms Dixon, do you want to comment?
Through the Chair, so if I can just clarify, you're thinking renaming the policy to playground and play space? Yep. Yep. That could be incorporated. Yep.
Right. I wonder whether we should even deal with it tonight. Councillor Gard, it's up to you. Where are you?
I would like to stand with the motion. Do we need a seconder before I can speak to the motion?
Yes, I will ask for a seconder. Councillor Kerry. So, Councillor Gard, please go on.
Just two maxims. What ain't fixed, what ain't broken, don't fix it. But also, say what you mean and mean what you say. I think they're two very valuable ones in this situation. The word play space has always bemused me somewhat as someone coming into council. I think it's a government term more than a community term. And in all seriousness, I know we may have raised it in a more jocular way, but in all seriousness, good communication, particularly with something as important as this sort of item, I think is essential. And I think there's room for more than one term, because to me, play space means a space where one can play. It doesn't infer to me as both a user, a resident, and now as a councillor, that it is indeed a playground with equipment. And I think it's very valuable to use the English language as well as you possibly can, instead of rationalising it the way that we all tend to do. And it also helps down the track, and I'm not teaching you to suck eggs, Your Worship, when it comes to legal matters as well, to have more precise terminology rather than generalisation. So I very much commend this, and in no way a jocular sense do I do so.
Councillor Kerry. Anyone speaking against the motion or amending? Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, I just have a question and then I'll speak. I'm just wondering, with the shelter, whether we need to identify shelter overplay equipment.
Ms Dixon, how does the policy take account of shelter? You mean like shade and so on?
Through the chair, so just for clarification, you want to know how the policy covers the provision of that amenity, a shade sale over play equipment?
Well, yes, because in the hierarchy here, it talks about shade and shelter, but it doesn't bring up the issue of shelter or shade over play equipment. And have been told in the past consistently that we need to, if we want that, we need to specify that because it changes the service level. So, as one of the basic things, I was just wondering, is that covered or shall we articulate it?
Councillor Valescu, just to help you and other members, I note that in the hierarchy descriptions on page 172, you've got local and neighbourhood level playgrounds referring just to natural shade. Presumably that means trees mainly. And for regional, we have a handful of regional playgrounds, and they are described as having shade and shelter without the word natural, which implies that it's only at regional play spaces that you would have a built shade structure. And I'll leave aside the question of destination play spaces because we don't have any. Ms Dixon, did you want to clarify?
Through the chair, that is correct. At a local level, the service level doesn't talk about shade. At the neighbourhood level, it talks about shelter and natural shade. And again, further up in terms of regional, there'd be shade shelters as well as natural shade.
I'd like to move that we include both at the neighbourhood level and at the regional level options for shade over equipment. Over play equipment as a consideration.
I will just ask staff to consider appropriate wording. Perhaps rather than.
If I have
an idea, but go ahead.
It was quite difficult to have that consideration as part of the policy, and that's why I'd like to have it explicit. It's not something that we do all the time, but to actually have it in the policy for our considerations.
We could have a third dot point under safe and sustainable, because I think it's probably where it fits in a way, that consideration shall always be given to shade over play equipment subject to budget considerations.
Yeah, and where appropriate?
Yeah, well, where appropriate.
And if we could identify it, that it's the neighbourhood regional levels.
Not local?
Not local, because it's often not equipment.
Well, okay, maybe there's if you really only want to change it at the neighbourhood level, then probably just by it might be as simple as deleting the word natural. But Ms Dixon wants to make a suggestion.
Through the chair, so just if we look at the service levels in the policy. Is under type of facilities for neighbourhood level and also regional, it mentions shelter and natural shade. But we can strengthen the policy up when it comes back to council and include a sentence under the safety section of the policy, if that would strengthen it.
Bearing in mind that this is going out for consultation, so there's further opportunity for input, but Councillor Valescu, if you just took out the word natural in relation to neighbourhood level, then regional and neighbourhood would refer to shade and shelter, and only local level playgrounds would refer to natural shade.
Your Worship, I'd like it to be explicit to have shade over equipment.
Okay.
That's what I'd like at those two levels.
Well, maybe both of the changes that I'm suggesting would be the best thing to get that objective met. So if we took out the word natural under neighbourhood when it says type of facilities, and we had that third dot point under safe and sustainable, staff have put something up. Do you want to just check on the screen?
I don't think that will be it. I think we have a policy where we like to use natural shading by having trees and things like that, and that's important to stay in there. I would actually like to have shade over equipment
but
somewhere.
But Councillor Valescu, that's exactly what I was suggesting as a third dot point under safe and sustainable.
Yeah, that's fine, but not removing natural.
The words shade and shelter in respect of neighbourhood and regional playgrounds implies that it could be either, whereas if you only use the word natural in respect of local playgrounds, it implies that you won't be providing built structures, but there could be the shade of trees.
That in the category level, we do have types of facilities, shelter and natural shade for neighbourhood level, and we also have shade and shelter, but none of those indicate, and the budgeting does not take into account shading from on the equipment. It is something that's been brought up for a few years, and through various consultations we've had, we were lucky to trial one early, I think it was before we changed tacts down at Plimpton Park, and there are a lot of people at the consultations that say other councils, other reserves actually shade the equipment with purpose-built shelters. So that's why I'd like to be quite explicit, and just add it in there.
Councillor,
I'm happy to take it to
Councillor, I think we're at the point where I'd invite you to move a deferral of the motion, because if I haven't been able to help you formulate it, and you haven't formulated it, but it's a good idea, then it should probably be deferred and it can be sorted out between meetings.
We're pretty close to doing it. All we need to do is include shelter over equipment. We don't need to remove anything else.
Point of order.
There's a point of order, but please hold on. Just be patient for a second. I'm taking some advice from the Acting Governance Manager. Before I take Councillor Hull's point of order, I'll just explain how I see the current state of play. Although we've got some words on screen, that was an attempt to formulate an amendment which Councillor Valescu was contemplating to move, but he hasn't actually moved that. So it is within Councillor Valescu's rights to move an adjournment while he's still speaking. But while he's contemplating that, Councillor Hull, what's your point of order?
You're pretty much around it. Councillor Valescu, like the last item, started to speak against the motion and then part the way through decided I'll move an amendment. Well, which he hasn't done. And the other thing is that it's a protracted period of time. The clock hasn't been going at all. And this is an example of how meetings can blow out. And I I ask you to have
Councillor Hull, okay, you've made your 2 points. On the first point, I say that there's not a point of order because Councillor Bilescu was seeking to move an amendment, although he didn't quite get to that. So it'll be back to him when we resume, if the council chooses to defer. In relation to speaking times, I do accept your point of order, and I'd simply ask for the assistance of staff in maintaining the time clock with our customary 3 minutes. So, Councillor Bilescu, I turn back to you. What would you like to do?
To move an amendment, if that's the only thing I've got to do. I was under the impression I was asking some questions and getting clarification. Maybe I embellished too much on the points and the reasons why.
Okay, Councillor, if you're moving an amendment, please state your amendment.
Is that we include consideration for shade over equipment at neighbourhood and regional level, neighbourhood and above level playgrounds.
All right, and that could be under the safe and sustainable
yes.
points? Yes. Okay.
And consideration means consideration, doesn't mean it has to happen.
Correct. Ms. Dixon?
Through the Chair, we've just got some further information that I think is important for Council to understand with that as well. In the policy, in terms of shade, in terms of shelter, we're talking about shelter for over barbecues, picnic areas. If Council is seeking to have shade shells over play equipment, that will have a significant cost implication, would be in the vicinity of $50,000 per play space. So that's something Council would need to consider as well.
So I have an amendment. Is it on the screen to your satisfaction, Councillor? Councillor Bilescu? Very well, and I mean you have pretty well spoken to your amendment. Is the amendment, well, Councillor Pfeiffer, did you have a question? Or you're seconding, excellent. Did you wish to speak to that? Thank you, Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Worship. Look, I do quite enthusiastically support this. The one comment that does come back to me time and time again after we unveil a new playground is, where's the shade? Often these playgrounds don't have natural trees around them. Often, yeah, we can plant a few, but you're talking 20 years to actually get to the point of it being useful. And I think, look, personally, I'm happy to see this go down to local level as well, but let's put it out to public consultation, see what comes back. Yes, there will be an additional expense associated with this, but, excuse me, it's an expense to actually ensure that the play space is useful for 12 months a year. Otherwise, it's, you know, for vast parts of the year, it's pretty much useless and you're not going to get kids on there anyway. So I think it's a good amendment and I commend to Council.
I'm eternally indebted to Councillor Appleby's guidance in relation to voting on amendments, and therefore, without further ado, I put the amendment. Those in favour, raise your hand. Those against, the amendment is carried by majority. Those who have not yet spoken in the debate may speak now. Councillor Hull.
Question. Councillor Pfeiffer mentioned about putting it out for consultation. Well, I think that's wise, but at the end of the day, the amendment that was just moved is for us for consideration, and I do support Councillor Bilescu on this. He has been at this one for a while, and indeed he has had success in having this happen at one particular play space, to his credit. And it would actually help us address the changing climate as it impacts on play spaces. It will address the possible safety issues with overheated play equipment, because there might be some prospect of it being in the shade. And obviously it will help the skin of our children who might choose to use the play space, and optimise the times that the play space can be used, because sometimes it's that hot that the kids wouldn't go there and responsible parents wouldn't send them there or allow them to go there. So we're actually getting a better use out of our equipment by providing a safer environment. So I do support it, and look, you know, this is all part of our agenda to not only increase our open space, to improve our open space, but increase the amenity, such as play spaces, on the open space.
No one else? Then the mover to close the debate. Councillor Gard, anything else?
No, Your Worship, I think all has been said.
I put the motion as amended. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. We turn to page 176, the Oaklands Roundhouse demolition costs. So this is the motion to actually spend the money to follow through a motion which we have already resolved. It might be a good opportunity to air the fact that when the matter was last before the council, Councillor Hull was making inquiries about insurance claims in respect of the roundhouse, and he followed up with staff, as is his right, after the meeting, and ultimately that led to a double check of the information that he was provided, and it transpired that a potential $80,000 insurance claim simply was never lodged. So Councillor Hull was absolutely right in sniffing that out. My understanding of the matter is that now that it's slated for demolition, there would be some doubt about the validity of an insurance claim at this point. But all we can do is move on. Mr. Scull, did you want to comment?
Yes, Chair, you're correct. The insurance claim was not lodged, and we've also had advice that to submit the claim at this point, where it's publicly noted that the roundhouse is up for demolition, that there'd be no chance of that being put through.
A question from Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, since the news of the demise of the roundhouse has been put out there, and this will be obviously the final chapter in some ways, has there been any response from the government in terms of witnessing that the council's intent? Has there been any response whatsoever from the government, given that it is technically their building, we've got rights and privileges to it, and we can't use it for whatever we want?
Yes, Councillor, I haven't seen any such across my desk, but I'll ask Mr. Scull. No, so the answer's no. Councillor Lesko, you're moving? Two questions.
First of all, why wasn't the insurance claim put in? And also, if an insurance claim was put in and we received an amount of money, what would happen if we didn't spend the money and then decided to demolish the building? Will we need to give it back?
Mr. Scull?
Through the Chair, when the theft occurred and there was extensive damage to the piping, which was in the order of $80,000, the insurance claim was lodged and there was some funds claimed for it, because the future of the roundhouse was unknown there and unknown at that time by Council, and reinstatement of the works posed a risk of being further damage. The decision was not to pursue that aspect of the theft as well. In regards to your second question, was it if we claimed it now? What?
We didn't. If we had claimed it and we hadn't spent the money, would we have to give it back now?
I would assume so.
Well, I'll just say, Councillor Lesko, that generally speaking, when you're insured for damage and you receive and you have a valid claim and it's paid out, you get to choose what you do with that money. You don't have to spend it on like-for-like replacement. Just in the same way that if your car is stolen, you get $5,000 from the insurance company legitimately, you don't have to buy the same make and model of car. You can buy a bicycle instead. I hope that helps.
When was the decision made not to proceed?
I think there was an email April last year. The one that wasn't provided to Councillor Hull, I recall. But can Ms Dixon help with that? Councillor Valesco, I'm not sure it was a decision of staff as such. It just didn't happen. I think the thinking sometime in the past, and I suspect it was April last year from going from memory, but I could be wrong about that, is that staff were going to wait before pursuing that full $80,000 loss, pending a decision about the roundhouse future. And of course that didn't occur for a long time after that, but it seems that the decision whether or not to pursue the claim was not revisited, as far as I can work out, and that's without having a written report on it.
I'll ask at this point in time, did this not all happen at the same time, simultaneously, when they were leading the elected members in that ward to believe that other things were happening?
Sorry, what do you mean other things were happening?
Well, the claims were being lodged and everything was going to be restored as per the insurance policy that we paid dearly for.
Ms Dixon, do you want to comment on that?
Through the Chair, and apologies for the delay in that. So the incident that we're talking about occurred in February 2012, and from what we can gather, and I need to also bring Council's attention, that records are not complete in this incident, so it's been difficult to track exactly what occurred, and the staff who were involved in that stage are no longer with the organisation. But around July 2012, we received the money for the amount that we did claim, and it seems that we chose not to pursue the other amount for the other damage.
All right. Well, I think we've threshed it about a bit. Members can, you know, take it up further if they wish to, but I think we should get on with the business at hand. It was just a very significant occurrence that I felt should be brought to light. But now we're dealing with allocation of funds for demolition. So, who would like to go? Councillor Crossland to move. Seconded, Councillor Westwood. I'll come to you, Councillor Crossland, first, if you wish to speak.
No, I don't need to speak. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Only to say that we'd better do it if that's what we think we should do. Thank you.
Anyone speaking against the expenditure, bearing in mind that we've already resolved to demolish? Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I thought the allowances in the cost estimates were excessive for the size of the building. I'm not proclaiming to be an expert on it, but I think those numbers are excessive, and certainly would provide anyone looking to tender for this project a fair amount of leeway to perhaps gild the lily a bit. So I would like to see the total budget for the project to remove the building to be reduced back down to something more reasonable, like
Is anyone speaking? Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Councillor Valesco.
I've got a question.
Question.
If this is with Councillor Hutchinson saying we're signalling how much we're willing to pay for this, is there a risk that we are actually going to get a whole lot of quotes at 77,000? Should this be in confidence?
Unfortunately, I mean, there's an overarching question here about whether this even needed to come to council, given that council had resolved to demolish the building. Do you have a view on that, Mr. Mifsud?
Through the chair, I hear Councillor Valescu's concerns. excuse me, this is, to me, it's no different to the Section 48 reports that we've previously looked at in some major projects recently, and they quote the total budget, so it's not dissimilar to this. You'd still go through an open tender process, and the most competitive tender would win the job.
Mr. Scull, to add something?
If I may, Chair, just to point out from page 177 that three quotes were obtained, and the most competitive quote was for $36,500. The other amounts of contingencies, just in case there's some soil removal required and any soil issues that we've got, and disconnection of service estimates. So this will most likely be done by different contractors anyway. So I'd suggest that the $36,500 would be a reasonably competitive quote for a building of that size.
Yeah, I mean, the maximum amounts, but if people want to win tenders or whatever, then presumably they're going to put in the best price they can do the job for. Then is anyone else speaking against the motion?
I'll just to see this through. Mr. Mayor,
I will hold you to relevance, of course, because we're not discussing the demolition decision itself.
Yeah. Well, one of the relevant questions I've got is it not true that the original quote to council, when the first quote was obtained to demolish this building, was $130,000? And then in 2015, in the report, $91,000? And now we're down to $36,500. So you do have to wonder somewhat. If we leave it there another 6 months, will it come down to maybe, $20,000?
I'll just take that as a question first. Yeah. Why the steeply descending estimates of cost in this matter? Mr. Scull or someone?
Through the Chair, my understanding, the previous quotes that were brought to Council included the other costs, which are contingency around, disconnection of services, any treatment of soil, any asbestos that becomes apparent through the demolition. At this point in these costs, we have got three quotes for the $36,500, but they are just for the building demolition. The report aims to bring Council's attention to other potential costs and seek allocation of a budget, but we will go through a competitive process to ensure that we get the best price in terms of those other works that need to occur.
I'll stick to another fiscal question, Mr. Mayor. Now, if we had lodged that insurance claim and received $80,000, this would actually created a buffer to the expense involved in demolishing the building. But we didn't do that. And not only that, the city paid for the insurance policy for all those years on a building that was valued at how many? $1.5 million. That would have been quite a handout by the community to ensure that building was insured. So I just want to identify from that point that there has been some failures, and I have got concerns that there's been pushback tonight by the staff that they don't completely understand the relevance of insurance and the monies invested by our community to ensure the buildings are actually maintained to a satisfactory level, this being an example.
Well, Councillor Hull, I've allowed some leeway. Did you have anything more about the demolition costs in themselves?
No. The only thing I will ask, Mr. Mayor, is that if we go with the cheap quote, and that is attractive, can we actually have some assurance that, given this building is on the westerly side of the Oaklands estate, that the appropriate dust mitigation will happen, that we won't have Dave and Co. With their old red Bedford truck doing this and not taking the appropriate precautions with dust mitigation, given the close proximity to a lot of residents.
That's a fair question, Mr. Scull or Ms. Dixon.
Thank you, Chair. I hear the comment and I'm very much aware of the proximity to neighbourhoods, so we will make sure that dust prevention occurs.
All right, I think that wraps up the debate. Would the mover like to close the debate?
I think everything's been said, Your Worship.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. Thank you. Division is called. All those in favour, please stand in your place. Those in favour are Councillors Pfeiffer, Kerry, Telfer, Westwood, Byram, Valescu, Appleby, Gard and Crossland. Thank you. You may be seated. Those against are Councillors Hutchinson and Hull. I declare the motion carried by majority. Thank you. We move on to 2222, page 179, the liquor licence applications amendments to governance policy. As I understand it, this leads to a total of increased consultation, doesn't it? Could I just get staff clarification on that? Who?
Through the Chair, it'll streamline the consultation process.
Okay. Right, over to you, Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to move this, but I have a couple of questions. And the first one is that I believe that a lot of the policy changes in relation to change legislation. Is that correct?
Ms. Dixon?
Through the Chair, that is correct.
The other question I have is my enduring expectation that, given that elected members are asked about liquor licensing applications in their area, will the staff ensure that, to enable me to be totally equipped to make comments on behalf of the community, that SAPOL will be asked before I'm asked? In other words, I want to know if there's been any problems with these establishments from the South Australian Police to make me able to make an informed decision on behalf of my community. Can that happen?
Through the Chair,
Ms. Hardy.
The policy as written recommends that staff liaise with SAPOL if a liquor licence application has gone through public consultation and has received concerns from nearby residents. I don't think it would be feasible to liaise with SAPOL for every liquor licence application, because we have requested information from them in the past and they have advised staff that they're unable to provide advice on every application because they receive thousands per year. So we've found it very difficult to get feedback from them on the licences that we've currently engaged with them on.
Mr. Mayor, that being the case, look, I understand that the number of liquor licence applications are quite finite. They're not many. And I asked the CEO in his contact with the commander of the Sturt Police to actually raise that as an issue for us, that we're not getting good customer service from SAPOL in that regards. It's not an onerous expectation, given the number of applications that we want advice on. So I'd like that conveyed back to them, if that was possible, Mr. Mayor. I think it's quite acceptable to do that. And I think our community would expect that SAPOL should make a comment in their interest. Mr. Mayor, just quickly, things have been pretty stable in the City of Marion for some time with this issue. Go back into the 1990s, Councillor Telfer might recall, but there was big problems, particularly in the ward that I represent now, with licensed establishments in Westfield. It can go ugly. It can go really ugly and create a lot of work for staff a lot of work for elected members. In fact, they even set up zone consultations over there that went on and on and on. If we've actually got this policy largely correct and tweaking it up with legislative change, I'm moving it. Happy to move it. But I want to keep an eye on it. I suggest you all keep an eye on it because it can cause you a whole world of pain. And but I'm happy to go with this recommendation. I think it's a sound recommendation which should serve us well and continue the period of calm that we've had.
Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson, do you wish to speak? Then anyone opposing that? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. And so we go to page 204, late item, but not totally unexpected. Members, I can advise that there's been progress in our lobbying for a Southern Regional Football Facility, otherwise known as the Southern Regional Soccer Facility. The current proposal is to seek matching funding for three synthetic pitches, plus a car park and clubhouse, adjacent to the BMX facility on Majors Road. There's a site just to the west of the BMX facility. Approaches have been made to Duna because they maintain that land. I understand that at officer level there has been a receptive response, but it is not decided yet. So subject to an approval for the land and state government funding, we're really ready to go with this one now because we do have a preferred site. And the reason for the motion is just to make it very clear to state government that we're totally committed to 50-50 funding to make this happen. Back in May last year, you will recall, we expressed by way of resolution in principle support to the extent of $2.5 million, but this is just restating it in a more definite form. And just at this time, as they're putting together the state budget, I would suggest it would be quite useful to have this to convey to state government. So, to move, Councillor Byron to move, and seconded Councillor Crossland. Councillor Byron.
Thank you, Worship. Yes, we need to really make sure that we have the message out there that we're looking for co-funding. This is the time to do it, as you've already stated, Your Worship. Thank you.
Slund.
Just to echo what Councillor Byron has said, that this is a great opportunity. We've agreed strategically we definitely need this facility, and the advantage of this facility is that it will be not on council land and it will be managed and funded by a third party going forward, so no ongoing cost.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Could be a question. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Worship. Look, just a question in regard to the actual allocation, so point two. My question is, should we be actually allocating it within the budget or suggesting that it would be drawn down from the CFPP at the time when available, like we've done with Edwards Down Oval?
I was inclined to actually commit it in the budget subject to the matching funding, but I'll ask Mr. Mifsud to comment.
Through the Chair, the most appropriate step would be to incorporate it in the budget, and once we get into that budget year, then Council is in an appropriate decision to decide where you want to fund it from. To do that now is preemptive.
So, Mr. Mifsud, you're saying that we should stick with the wording as printed?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Councillor Pfeiffer?
Yeah, so the only thing about that is that if we didn't actually expend it next financial year, it would then be a $2.5 million carryover.
Well, that's why, Councillor Pfeiffer, at the moment, it's allocating it in the draft budget. So, I mean, it means that we still make a final decision in June, typically, as to whether to really commit that money for the coming year or not, and one would hope there might be an indication whether it's in the state budget by that time. Mr. Mifsud, did you want to add to that?
No, I'm certainly comfortable with that approach.
Okay. I'm not quibbling. I want to allocate it. It's just a matter of how you actually do it.
well, I'm taking the advice that,
okay,
you know, this is putting it into the draft budget. It's still one step further than what we did last May, so it's a message to the state government that we have that money available should they wish to partner with us. Got a few takers here. Councillor Vlescu.
I was just wondering if we send an even stronger message to the government that we'll allocate that $2.5 million from our reserves, irrespective of the budget. The reserves are there, and if they change their minds, we can make a decision afterwards. It's a draft budget. We still haven't signed off on it. This way, we are actually saying we're taking it from our reserves, the CFPP. We have the money in there, and that's all we need to do.
Well, I'll ask Mr. Minister to comment, but really what we do is we make the budget decision first, and then we decide which part of the budget is going to be drawn down to actually pay for it, whether it be by loan or reserve or out of a cash account or whatever. So it wouldn't make a difference if we said it was going to be from a reserve as such at this point. That's my understanding of it. But I'll ask Mr. Mifsud to answer that question.
Thank you, through the Chair. That's quite right. Once Council allocates it into the budget, that's committed funds. Council then can decide through a number of options as to how you'd like to fund that. So specifying a particular funding option at this point in time doesn't increase the likelihood of anything occurring.
But having said that, if this is passed and our financial staff then present us with a draft budget, the $2.5 million proposed expenditure could actually come out of our reserves in accordance with what you're saying, Councillor Vlescu. That's probably what I would expect to happen given the amount in the reserves and the amount of expenditure. Councillor Vlescu.
The reason I'm asking, can't we just make... It's something we've talked about for a long time. There's been a lot of discussion. If we wanted to send a message, why don't we just say, look, when you need it, the money's going to come out of the reserve. Can't it be irrespective of the budget? Based on the long history for this, do we need to go through the budget for that? Because we've done it with PLEC funding. I think we've taken $700,000 out for Finnis Street, and that wasn't part of the budget. That just came out. So I'm just wondering, like, what's the difference? Why can't we do it that way?
With the Chair, from a prudential management point of view, there's a number of other steps that Council has to go through. For example, we would have to go through a Section 48 report. So having that commitment, as the Mayor has stated, in the budget is as firm as we can put in place. We do have to go through a number of other steps, and then the actual funding decision can come after that. There's no problems with that whatsoever. It's not going to have any greater weight.
Councillor Hull and Councillor Gard.
Mr Mayor, are you actually providing us with some local knowledge in terms of the government psyche? Are you looking at this in terms of us positioning ourselves with like a forward estimate that the government would understand, rather than sort of we're going to have some undefined way of funding it? So is that pretty much where you're coming from? Because if you are, I understand that.
In a word, Councillor, yes. You know, I've been lobbying on behalf of Council to enlist or secure this funding from state government. And I believe at this moment, while the state budget is being drawn up, it would be appropriate for us to give a stronger expression than we already have, saying that we're committed to this project financially and in every other way. So it does fit into that scheme.
Recently we were told by one councillor we should be prepared to say no. Is this an example where we should be prepared to say yes?
Yeah, I'll take that as rhetorical. Good point, though. Councillor Gard?
Your Worship, three questions. In the absence of a full report on it, I was interested to know the implications for the Hallett Cove Sport and Community centre, how for example, the existing soccer pitch works into this. Secondly, the role played to date in the selection of site by the Soccer Peak body. And thirdly, in relation to site selection, at one stage we were tossing the ball around, excuse the pun, about the southwest corner of Majors Road and South Road. Was that all brought into contention when this eventual site was selected?
Well,
in fact, is the site actually selected?
Councillor Gard, I'll make some comments and invite Mr Scull to add some more. In relation to Cove Football Club, in other words, the soccer club down there, it's envisaged that this would be their new home pitch or home grounds. The future of the playing spaces at the Cove Community and Sports Club remains unresolved. Council hasn't made any decision. There's been no firm decision either way. So clearly, if this came to fruition, then we would be asking, well, what do we now do in terms of configuration of the playing spaces down there? So it's an unresolved question. In terms of the sites, I know that staff have considered various sites. The particular site you refer to would have been on Glenthorne Farm, and you know, that's a separate project we're working on. It seems that this is a site which may be confirmed as available to us in the fairly near future, whereas it looks some distance away with Glenthorne. So not only do we have a site that's more likely to be available soon, but we also have the synergy of having a car park next to the BMX facility, and at times there would be overflow where there could be crossover use of that car park. So I'll ask Mr Scull to add to that.
The participation of the Peak body in the...
Oh, I beg your pardon, there was a third part to that. The Football Federation, our staff have been working hand in hand with them. So it's as much their project as it is ours at the moment, and obviously if state government becomes involved, it will very much be a three-way project. Mr Scull.
Through you, Chair, I thank you. I think you've covered it all. The Cove is certainly bursting at the seams, and so they're looking for more options for their home ground, so they'll be delighted with this. The site selection, a key factor from the Football Federation of South Australia was that there would be a southern hub. There's significant resources being put into northern sporting sections, and they'd use that for the elite pathway, and at the moment there's a real disadvantage for kids with talent in the south because they've got to travel to Playford. So the Football Federation were looking for somewhere which isn't too far south, and the options, the Panthers Soccer Club, not football, no longer were just considered too far out, so their ideal was the Majors Road. And the final thing is that Department of Environment, Water and Natural Resources are very keen that this is used as an additional sporting site, if you like, for a different sport in that area. So you've already got a number of sports, and they're very keen to do that. And obviously with the opportunity to share facilities and parking with the BMX was just perfect. So they've actually indicated to us that they're very keen on this. Now, it needs to go through the process of getting ministerial approval, but it's perfect use for the land from their site, and that's what they've said.
Very well. There being no speakers against the motion, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by a majority. Thank you. Page 211, Complaints and Grievance Policy and Procedure Review. I'll just make the point that on 213, in the box on the top right-hand side, there's a reference to the compliant policy when it should be the complaint policy, so it's just a little typo that's been picked up. The other point that I'll make before we get into debate, there are a series of Ombudsman recommendations which have sort of inspired this review. On page 215, recommendation 6 from the Ombudsman, that all councils periodically evaluate their section 270 review investigations. I just point out that over a month ago I requested in writing a summary of the 270 reviews, the section 270 reviews over the last 2 years, but haven't received that. So, Mr. Skull, what's the latest on that?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I've talked this afternoon with the Acting Manager of Governance and she has that information and will be providing it very shortly.
Oh, lovely. Okay, over to you. Looking for someone to move, as printed. Councillor Hutchinson to move. Very concise debate. Is that seconded? Councillor Byram, did you wish to? Anyone wish to speak to that? No one speaking against? Question from Councillor Hull.
Yeah, if somebody has a grievance with the Ombudsman, where does one go? If I can reflect on a case that I was involved in where I was investigated, it was in regards to the use of a chauffeur-driven car, members might remember.
Councillor, I'm going to rule that irrelevant, so it's out of order, because we're dealing with our complaints and grievance policy, not in relation to the Ombudsman. It's an interesting question, but I invite you to take it up after the meeting.
It is linked with ours, because what I'm getting at is I had no opportunity to have a meeting with the Ombudsman during all that, where the staff were going in there all the time to meet with the Ombudsman. I just wanted to make that point that, you know, all's not fair sometimes, and I think it's important to point it out sometimes.
Well, fortunately, we've taken some steps, Councillor, in improving the culture of the organisation, and you're not likely to see a cabal of staff behind your back trying to shoot down a particular elected member. And we're going to be doing some more work soon on improving relations even further between elected members and managers. More on that soon. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. It's a question for Mr. Skull, and it relates to your earlier comment. To get to a Section 270 reviews, usually the resident or complainant has gone through a significant process before it gets that far. Is there a reason why local members and the Mayor would not be aware of those complaints? Because I wouldn't have thought there were so many that it was restrictive and not of interest. I have a few examples, which I'm not going to name in the meeting, but it would have been beneficial to actually be aware that those complaints were escalating to that level, and would have liked to have been informed earlier.
Through the Chair, an interesting question. There are strict rules around actually divulging complaints which have gone to the Ombudsman, so certainly that it would usually be the case that the Mayor and I would be aware of complaints going through the Ombudsman. If anything is escalated to a significant level, you're not allowed by a very clear indication in the letter from the Ombudsman to discuss it. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but where the appropriateness of all Ombudsman's complaints which are known to us to be divulged to members, I'm not sure if that would, and I'd need to get some advice from Governors, but if that would be appropriately conveyed to you.
The Mayor,
just 1 minute, Councillor. Just want to clarify, I understand that if one has a letter from ICAC, it's not to be discussed with anyone, but I didn't think that was the case for the Ombudsman. I might have misunderstood Mr. Skull's remarks.
Councillor Wilkinson of the City of Adelaide knows all about it at the moment.
Can I ask a question?
I will come to you, that's all right. But shall I ask the Acting Governance Manager to just respond to that?
Quite often the preliminary investigations are confidential. When they first come to Council, the Ombudsman does instruct that they are confidential. Normally the outcomes of the investigation are then released to the public, but it's not until the people have had the natural justice and the right of reply that that happens.
Oh, that's fair. Actually, I can see. Thank you for the clarification, and Mr. Skull was right then. I believe that policy is to prevent someone's name being dragged through the mud before the mud's even been investigated, which seems fair enough. Now, I've got a couple of questions. Councillor Hull, then Councillor Kerry.
Well, Mr. Mayor, the case in question, and we're talking about local government now and the Ombudsman and this policy, why is Councillor Wilkinson named in the paper today as being investigated by the Ombudsman with the City of Adelaide before the investigation's even begun?
Well, I think to make that relevant, is that something that could happen here? I'll ask the... I mean, Ms Thwaites, do you know about the case?
I'm not familiar with the case. I don't know who else could have gone to the press with that name or anything, so I can't really comment on that at all, sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we can answer it. Councillor Kerry?
Yeah, through the chair, I'd just like to ask Adrian, what are the penalties of revealing an Ombudsman's report?
Councillor, I'd have to take that on notice. I know that there's significant penalties for ICAC, and that would certainly be something that would send us all broke. But for the Ombudsman inquiries, so that's the step-down level, I'm just not sure what the penalties would be. But I can find out, and we've certainly got some letters that I can reference quite easily back in the office to understand that.
I've quietly heard from the Acting Governance Manager that this may be been about 10 or 12 Section 270 reviews over the last 2 years. So it would seem reasonable, going back to Councillor Crossland's question, that the Mayor and Ward Councillors are informed if there's a local issue which develops into a Section 270 review. Is there any reason why that shouldn't occur, Ms Thwaites?
It is actually now in the procedure to actually notify ward councillors or all of council, depending on the issue. Some issues may be specific to wards, some may be council-wide, so that is in the procedure in the paperwork provided.
Sounds like poor old Mayor misses out, but I'm sure he'll be told anyway. Councillor Blesku?
Just wondering whether it's worth having a session on this, ICAC and the Ombudsman, having it with someone like Kay Smith, we've had her before, just someone with the knowledge, the confidence and the ability to explain it. And I'm not doubt, and a good thing, especially if curly questions get asked, we've got very knowledgeable CEO, very knowledgeable governance staff, but with that tricky stuff, having an expert there, they'll be able to be on top of it straight away.
So thanks. Thank Councillor, I'll take that as a suggestion. I've actually got my list of forum topics here, so I will add to that. I think it's an excellent suggestion. So we'll have a forum session on that perhaps in the next few months. We've got some packed forums, but we'll put it on the list. Mr. Skull?
If I may make a comment, Chair, thank you. The Ombudsman's actually got a rolling series of presentations that he gives. His name's Mr. Wayne Lyons, and he's actually offered to come out to talk to councillors in councils across the state, so certainly it wouldn't be hard to get him out at a time where he's doing that on a rolling program, and so does the ICAC Commissioner.
Now, getting back to the motion, it's been moved and seconded. If no one's speaking against, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously, actually. So we go over to page 225. Oh, beg your pardon. Ms. Thwaites would like to speak to what this next motion. What I was going to suggest is that rather than dealing with this matter tonight at all, that the administrative action take place first and that we come back to a later meeting with a motion to allocate elected members to such organisations as wish to have a liaison person. But I would suggest to administration that they write to not only those who have had a liaison member in the past, but in fact to all of our relevant organisations, including the Kaurna Heritage organisation, as well as our sports and community bodies. But Ms. Thwaites wanted to speak to that. I'll let her go next.
I just wanted to explain the reason why the process was put in the report as it was. Essentially, the groups in the report are the bodies that already have council liaisons. If we write to them after the council liaisons have been nominated, we can write to them once and simply advise that a particular member has been nominated and ask them if they wish to accept. They can then respond and let us know if they accept and tell us their meeting dates and things like that. If we do it the other way round, I've found in the past we've written to the groups, we have to wait for responses, often have to chase up responses, then bring it to council and then write back again to the groups and let them know who the liaisons are. So the process takes a lot longer and requires more steps in the process doing it that way.
Well, what I would say to that is, number one, there are consequences of handing an elected member's name with the suggestion that he is your liaison person. Because if elected members collectively knew that there were this list of bodies plus another 10, certain elected members might say, well, I don't want to be on this one, I want to be on that other one that I haven't been on before. So, you know, it would be a different choice that elected members would make. So I think that's one thing. Secondly, it seems to me when you write to groups like this, you say your response is required within 28 days. And, you know, if they don't respond, indeed they may be prompted by elected members to respond, but if they don't respond, then that's a no. So it's pretty straightforward. And in fact, in reality, if they wrote to us 3 months later wanting a liaison elected member, we could probably supply one anyway. But that way you're not really delaying it by more than a month or so. I've got a few elected members who want to comment or ask questions. Let's just informally do that. Councillor Pfeiffer, just going around the table.
Thank you, Your Worship. If we were to go with your suggestion then, would that be a deferral or just a moving of point one?
I haven't called the matter on yet.
Right. But if we were to go with that suggestion that you suggested, would that be a deferral? And does someone have to move it?
Not called on, they don't have to deal with it, do they? Mm-hmm. With the leave of the meeting, we simply won't deal with the item tonight. But I'll still go around the table and see if people have any questions. Councillor Telfer? No, my only drive in suggesting what I have is that we don't bring things to council meetings unless we have to, and if there's a purely administrative action to be done, it can just be done. But you want to deal with it as a council item of business. Okay, let's do that. Go for it, Councillor Telfer. Just trying to save time. We've got a couple of briefings after this meeting, by the way. Two important briefings. While that wording's coming up, Councillor Byrum had a question.
Yes, a couple of questions, thanks, Your Worship. Firstly, when we did this last time, 2 years ago, the letters had already been sent out and we already knew which organisations still wanted liaison councillors. So I asked the question as to why it's been done this way and why that wasn't done the same way as last time. That's the first question.
Well, Ms. has answered that, to be honest. I mean, I don't agree with the reasoning, but she has explained it.
The second question, then, is there's two parts. A lot of times when we're out visiting people out in the community and organisations, there's a lot of places that are not aware that there is the ability to have a liaison councillor. So by going out and writing to everybody now gives everyone the same footing for that. So that was the part of it. And then to lead on to that, those that already have liaison councillors, if we defer this or make some amendment, are the liaison councillors that we've had up until the end of 2016 going to continue until we do that?
Well, first of all, I think it just naturally happens that I don't know. What was the motion in relation to those liaison members appointed? Was it for it was for 2 years, was it? So, look, if you want to be technical about it, and, you know, well, it's like we're in the bankruptcy court or something. If you want to be technical about the forms, then we don't have any liaison elective members at the moment. In reality, if the same people turn up to the same meetings, I think they'll be warmly welcomed. So it doesn't really matter a lot, it seems to me. But technically, we don't have any, and really, this letter that we're talking about should have gone out 3 months ago. I think that's underlying the questions you're asking, Councillor Byrum. But is there any? Does that sort of answer your queries enough? I've already suggested that the letter go out more broadly to the existing list. Those that don't answer, take it as a no. But we'll move on with other questions before I get back to Councillor Telfer. Councillor Hull, question only.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Page 230, what were the representatives? You'll make an interesting observation on here that the two representatives from the Warrikarri ward are not on there at all.
And you're asking a question?
There's a reason for that, and that is that only one of those facilities fall within the ward. And I just ask that maybe some consideration could be given to Councillor Pryor and myself to at least have access to the only one that's in our ward, and Councillor Pryor and I will be glad to help, I'm sure.
Oh, it's not really a relevant question. It's something to come up in the process that we're going to deal with. Who's got another question? Councillor Gard.
Yes, I'm not quite sure of the process of consultation with such bodies, but in particular, view of the imminent developments at the South Australian Jockey Club site, should we be writing a special letter to the club? It may not necessarily be under this sort of liaison structure, but it just occurred to me that there might be value in such a connection.
I don't see any harm in writing the letter. I think you're talking about something a bit more than a community club, though. I mean, it's an extremely high-level board with significant financial responsibilities. I mean, we could write to the board of, the Westfield Group as well, but I don't think there's much point. They can look after themselves.
Yeah, with respect, Worship.
But look, there's no harm in writing a letter. Can we include the Jockey Club?
They're not the state authority any longer, just to make that clear. The South Australian Racing Authority is.
But you mean people that run Morphettville is what you mean, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah, why not? Then back to Councillor Telfer with her motion. I just note that 28th of February barely leaves enough time for a list of responses given the council agenda process and so on. Councillor Telfer, do you want to move that with just a slightly later date? I'm just thinking that, you know, if we get a letter off at the end of this week and you really want to give people probably 4 weeks, and you don't want the responses sort of back
all right
on that day.
We could change that to the 14th of March.
I reckon that
would
be great.
And I've got a suggestion also to add something that you were just discussing. So a few extra words. Current liaison positions. Is she getting it or not? I'm sorry. Can you take this down? Current liaison positions remain valid until new positions are ratified, I guess it would be.
Good point. Councillor Telfer, are you happy with that? I'll just ask if it's seconded. Councillor Pfeiffer. Councillor Telfer, back to you if you wish to speak to it.
I've left this vague in terms of the external bodies to be approached. That's obviously up to administration, and obviously elected members will be invited to put in their list, and if there's only one person puts in for a particular group, then it's not an arduous process. If we have two people, then on the night we can sort, or three, we can sort that out. But at least we're not going blow by blow tonight through all of this. So I look forward to this process.
I'll invite our staff to put it on a forum list for elected members to express interest, not make decisions, but express interest in different groups, and that will facilitate the process. Councillor Pfeiffer, anything to add? Anyone against Councillor Valescu?
Look, I'd like to avoid us writing to the current groups. I'd like us to investigate extra groups.
We're doing both, but you disagree with that, do you?
I disagree with covering the common ground. So my suggestion is that we hold off, the current liaison applies, but we just look at the extra groups by that time, so it's not as much work for the administration, and then we decide on the 14th of March and with the new groups and make one decision and send one letter out to the new group, to all the groups. I think that's probably a bit more efficient use of time and not chasing groups up. There may be some groups that may not get the chance to meet in that time as well. I'd like to move, unless the mover and seconder agree with that.
You want to exclude the groups which currently have a liaison elected member?
And that way we can suggest which groups we think will get it. It's not going to be as much work for our staff. We can still make the decision if we find out that, you know, there's...
Perhaps if we just, rather than try and change what's there, can we not simply add another motion, start another one, and say that all external bodies with current elected member liaisons, just added number three. So external bodies which currently have a liaison elected member shall be excluded from these inquiries, or you happy with that? I mean, I don't think that it's pretty different. It's a very different situation. Is that seconded? Well,
question.
Councillor Westwood.
Clarification. Anyway, I think that point three really works against point one. It's a deferment.
It's not in direct contrast. It's just taking out a subset, so I'll allow the amendment. That was a point of order, by the way, that you raised, but I rule against it.
Mover, we're prepared perhaps to take on number three.
You're prepared, mover and seconder, prepared to take on number three. Okay. With the leave of the mover and the seconder, the motion is amended. I should say it's moved in an amended form. Yeah, well, those minutes can be tidied up later anyway. I think we've got the idea. We then just have the one motion. with a mover and seconder. Is anyone speaking against the motion? Or do you have a question, Councillor Hull? All right, go on.
With the addition of the last bit, does that mean that organisations won't be contacted that have existing liaison persons?
So that's exactly what it means, yes.
Right. And how do we measure whether those organisations are actually getting any service delivery from those elected members?
We're not measuring it.
Why not?
Well, if council wishes to assess that, they can, but that's not part of the motion. That's the answer. If no one's speaking against, Councillor Hutchinson.
Oh, look, I just wanted to plant a seed, members. I'm not sure why council is a matchmaker in this sense. I think there's a number of these clubs that would be quite happy to approach individual members that may not be their liaison, and therefore I would even suggest put the onus back on the clubs to make their own relationships, and they foster those relationships with the individual members rather than having to do this all the time.
Can we take that as a note which could be incorporated into the letter in some fashion? Just ask administration to note that you know, external bodies are welcome to get to know their ward elected members and may wish to make suggestions about who their elected member liaison person could be. Words to that effect, anyway. Councillor Westwood.
Clarification, or I don't know if it's point of order, but I think that motion now, I'll be quite open, that I think that all organisations should be written to, so I don't want to vote for that point three, yet I'm happy with the deferment.
Well, then what you would do, Councillor, I can give you some advice about that. What you would do is move an amendment to delete paragraph three.
I would suggest that it be broken up into a separate motion.
No, well, you know, I thought this was the simplest one of the night, but it's actually chewing up our subsequent briefing time. But look, with what you intend, Councillor Westwood, there are actually two courses of action available to you. You can, by all means, you can speak against the motion because of your concern. If you wish to, you can move an amendment which deletes clause three. That would achieve your goal. Secondly, you can foreshadow a different motion should this motion be lost, and then you vote against the motion, which others may also do. So it's over to you. Don't feel constrained. You should push for what you want. Sorry. Councillor Westwood, did you want to go any further?
I don't think that's the best way to go about it, but I leave it to you in your hands. Thank you.
No, I'm giving you the options, and then you decide what to do. That's what happens.
Okay, in that case, I'll move that a further amendment, that point three, be deleted from that motion.
Right, it's not a further amendment because the motion was moved in an amended form. That doesn't count as an amendment, but you are moving an amendment by seeking to delete clause three. Now, is that seconded? Seconded by Councillor Kerry. Councillor Westwood, did you wish to speak any further to it?
Yes, briefly. Just that I have nothing against the original point three, but I'd like them separated so that a true a position is gained of each member of this council.
Thank well, you have gone about it the right way.
Okay.
Councillor Kerry? We then vote on the amendment whether to include clause 3 or not. If you want it taken out, which has the consequence that all external bodies will be written to, then you vote in the affirmative. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? The amendment is lost by majority. Debate continues for those who haven't spoken. Councillor Appleby.
I move the motion be put.
Is that seconded? Councillor... No, Councillor Pfeiffer's already been involved in this. Councillor Gard seconds the motion. I put the motion... that the motion be put. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. I put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried by majority. Thank you. On to page 231. A lot of these matters are fairly... Sorry? Yes. Page 231, members, the Work Health and Safety Report. Shall we note that? Councillor Hull, question?
Directed to the City Manager. In terms of the information provided at the bottom of page 231, how many of the lost time injuries in the 2015-16 period, that total 19, carried through into the current year? In other words, what is the current total of our staff that are actually under the assistance of our organisation with lost time injuries?
Mr. Scott?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to have to take that on notice. I just don't know, and I'm hearing up the front here that we don't know how many have been carried through. I'd have to get back to you, and I will get back to you tomorrow.
Mr. Mayor, I hope that question makes sense to you.
Yes, it does. It's one thing we have improved our reporting about the number of work injuries, but I think we've had very little data on how many are longer term and how many are short term. I think that would be a useful report, just informally, to circulate to members. You know, how many last for less than a week? How many last for less than 3 months? How many go on for more than a year? Or, you know, just about three or four categories to give us a picture. How many long-term, how many very temporary injuries are we getting in these figures? It is a good question. Mr. Scull?
I can, thank you, Chair. I can actually say that the ones from this year, the four from this year, have all been short term. But the question about carryover, I'd have to get back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to move the recommendation. I asked that question because I share an office with the National Health and Safety Manager for my organisation. It sort of rubs off a bit, knowing what the issues are for an organisation. So, to put things in perspective, this is information we didn't have 12 months ago. So we have come some way, but I think we can actually even get more quality information to help us understand where we're at. And I welcome Councillor Pfeiffer's comments on Saturday in terms of the relevance of this to an organisation.
Is that seconded? Councillor Gard? Anything to add?
Further to it.
Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We move on to page 234, the finance report. Moved, Councillor Telfer. Is that second, Councillor Kerry? Councillor Telfer, do you wish to say something?
The only comment I'd make is the acknowledgement that transfers to reserves of the Asset Sustainability Community Facilities Partnership Project, $1.9 million. We need to be quite open, I think, about how we use that. We have different ways that we understand how that's going to be used. We need some definitive clarity as a council about the parameters.
So, Mr. Mifsud, in these finance reports that we get, can we have that CFPP figure broken down? Or is that figure on... I suppose I'm looking at the figure on page 237. Is that the one you're referring to, Councillor Telfer? I mean, is that a single figure, or can it be broken down in some respect?
Yes, Mayor Hannah, that is a single figure. That was the figure that Council included in the current 2016-17 budget to be incorporated into the CFPP. So it's a single figure in total.
So that's the incoming bit. Once it's in the bucket, we do have ideas about this is for major projects, this is for a rainy day and so forth.
So
Councillor Telfer, what do you want to do?
About the, I support it, but my question's about the being quite clear as a council of the parameters of the usage of that.
Well, I'm not sure that it is a well-defined set of parameters in terms of that CFPP. Other than that, it is a council resolution which describes what that partnership fund is. But it's pretty broad. Yeah. Anything else to add? No. That I'll go to Councillor Kerry then. Anything to add? Questions? Councillor Gard?
Yes, this is just a general one, Your Worship, about the format. Well, not so much the format, but detail in the report under the heading of Capital Construction Progress. Quite often we find that in one of those bar charts there's considerable variation to what you might, to the line of capital or capex year to date compared with where you would expect it to be. And I just wonder whether we could have a one or two liner at the base of those bar chart reports, not each and every one, but just at the end of all reports, to keep us in the loop on why there may be, for instance, 20 or 30% of the expenditure made as opposed to 50% at the halfway mark of the year. And I know that in the real world it's not ever going to be exact, but when the variance is that much, it would be useful to know without having to have repetition.
Yes, you've got those variation notes on page 240, but Mr. Mitsub, can you add to that?
Yeah, through the chair, I'd be very comfortable in doing that. So I think that would add a lot of value to the report, and certainly very happy to do that.
Well, that's right. I do note that with a number of the bar graphs, that we do have little notes about reasons for this or that, and yet for one of the most major items of CapEx, we don't have any such note. So that's something that staff could take on board. Thank you. Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, members would remember that I've been constant on this, and it was something that, as I've told you before, was drummed into me by the aldermen, as they were, and that is that, you know, we need to keep an eye on these bar graphs that Councillor Gard's referring to, particularly when we've had two successive years of significant overruns of projects that haven't been completed. We should be hot on this now. We should be interrogating this and asking our CEO what his view is on this. Are we going to meet expectations? Because this is not encouraging, but to thus far into the financial year, to actually meet anywhere, get close to turning around a problem that has been significant. The ratepayers actually paying a premium with their rates, and they will actually be more understanding if they see value from their rates, not have overruns where the budget is not completed to the
I'll ask Mr. Scull to comment.
Thank you, Chair. I'll probably pass it on to Mr. Lyons, but just to say that we're really focusing on that intently and to get things done. And there's a lot of work that we're actually putting out to externally to the industry. And
Mr. Lyons?
Yeah, I'd like to reassure Councillor Hull that the 2015-16 carryover results were a significant reduction from the previous year, and at this point of this year we're trending towards a further significant reduction from that result. That's the information from my staff.
Good. All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those, that's carried unanimously. And so we move to page 247. Councillor Hutchinson's question
about Hendry Street Reserve, so it's been answered with a lot of detail. Page 252, Councillor Appleby's question about obesity prevention. I hope he wasn't particularly thinking of the Mayor when he wrote that.
Question
about that, Councillor Garr?
I did a little bit of extra reading on the background from the article in December, and apparently this whole idea was taken from France in around about 2007 and then introduced here in 2009. But I'm just intrigued to know why it seems to have worked in France to the extent that it was seen worthy of adoption here, as opposed to it not seemingly having worked here. Or are we missing something under the sheets as to the value of it, even though on face value it may not seem to be a success?
Any staff want to hazard a guess of the French lifestyle? Mr. Scull.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it could well be a cultural thing. It was a wonderful success in France, and the programme was adopted here with a lot of enthusiasm, including by Marion. And the results at the end really didn't merit continuation, which is a real shame. And the thing is that the education worked, but people were still actually not changing their habits, bad habits, which have led to the obesity problem that we've got.
Tell me about it. So, Councillor, on page 254, Councillor Valescu's question about developer bonds has been answered. Page 255, we have a motion on notice received from Councillor Telfer.
With the leave of the... can I ask the Mayor whether he's prepared to entertain a different motion given we have new information?
Is it something that can wait to the next meeting or not? In terms of developments?
It could wait, but I would then withdraw my motion and we'd get another motion lodged by Councillor Hutchinson. Yes, we can do that.
I'll just tell you the issue, members, is that we've got two items each taking about half an hour, which it's intended will take place after this council meeting. I wrongly, as it turned out, thought that this would be a very short meeting. But we want to finish by 8:30. So that's the issue there. And we have a couple of confidential motions to deal with. So look, if it can wait, I'd suggest next meeting, please.
Yeah.
And therefore you won't be proceeding with this one, Councillor Telfer? But I'll certainly give you every due consideration for the next meeting. Now, Councillor Valescu has a motion about developer bonds, page 257.
Yes, Your Worship, I'll be quick. We're responsible for assets in our streets, pavement, verges, and I believe a developer bonds is a good way for us to ensure that they're looked after by people that are doing work, conducting business, and impacting on those assets. We do not want our pavements butchered. We don't want shoddy work. We had an example of contractors doing shoddy work with the stuff with the gas reinstatement a few years ago. I also think that the time we brought this to the Minister's attention, soon after the Minister at the time had some significant legal issues, they're no longer in Parliament. We need to get bipartisan support for this. And We lend out our cat traps, we ask for a deposit, yet our most valuable assets we're no longer able to get a deposit on to ensure respectful behaviour because essentially the QA wasn't done on the legislation. And I think the last thing is we've got a streetscape policy, let's protect that streetscape. I think also by having a developer, you look at some of the redevelopments, you look at the care that is taken by many developers in containing the mess, keeping it tidy, and then you see by stark contrast what others do. I think part of collecting a bond will encourage, more neighbourly behaviour. So I ask that you assist me to pass this motion.
Thank you. In your electronic copy, do you have a copy of the appendix items? Right. Administration to note that, please, because if we're making decisions without those supporting historical documents, it does make it difficult. Very well. Is that motion seconded? Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak?
Just to endorse what Councillor Velescu said, I think it makes a whole lot of common sense.
Thank you. Is anyone speaking against the motion? Question, Councillor Hull.
Mr Mayor, I was on council when we had this before, and the staff carried through this request of council diligently, only to find out, as I remember, the regulations didn't support the legislation. Now, I would like to see our correspondence to be articulate, to get to the point so it's not misunderstood by the minister, that we actually understand what the problem, we'd like the minister to correct that to allow us to bring this back into being. Now, quickly, just Mr Mayor, the previous CEO, Mr Searle, was quick to remind council that in interstate there's actually developer contributions that actually go a lot further than this, so what we're asking for is quite reasonable. So I'd like to see our correspondence to the minister. I'd like to see a copy of it, actually. That'd be refreshing. And I'd like to see it be articulate and to the point and identify exactly where the problem is in terms of North Terrace and how they can address it.
Well, Councillor Hull, for a start, Councillor Blescu probably wisely hasn't prescribed a letter to be written. That means the Mayor will take responsibility for writing the letter.
Need a good
so
lawyer.
I hope I can assure you it will be articulate. Secondly, and the Mayor always tries earnestly to reflect the views and the reasoning of the member who's initiated these things, even if whether or not I personally agree with it. Some letters are shorter than others, though. But in relation to your other point, Councillor Hull, whenever I reckon just about whenever I write to a minister or someone at that level, a copy of the letter is put on the extranet for members to view. Maybe not if it's a one-liner acknowledgement, but any substantive letter is put there. So, you know, check the extranet. Unless there are any other speakers, I think I can just put this to a vote. All those in favour? That's carried against? Against? Oh, it's carried by majority. Thank you. Now we come to two matters which are potentially confidential. Would someone like to move confidentiality in relation to those? Move, Councillor Gard, seconded Councillor Crossland. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried by majority. So I'd ask people who aren't named in the motion, which is pretty well the people up here and around the horseshoe are okay, but if everyone else could please depart.